Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Welcome back to Tennis Podcast Tower's Indian Wells, where you find us at 10:30 p.m. this Tuesday evening, watching tennis. The majority of the day's fourth round matches have been played and completed, but some remain, notably Tommy Paul against Felix Auger-Aliassime, who are currently locked at one set apiece. We'll keep you posted. So keep listening for soon to be out of date tennis news.
Our favourite segment.
It's what you've all tuned in for. But no, we've watched plenty of completed matches today, and there is no shortage of stuff to talk about. David's here.
Hello. Yeah, I'm quite glad Matt has been put in charge of the agenda and actually writing all of this down, because I've long since forgotten what happened in the early afternoon.
And yesterday, we've got some of yesterday's action to talk about too. So yes, a tournament that is quite hard to keep track of.
Well, except that today, everybody played and everybody was in the same round, which has helped me out immensely. Tomorrow, that all goes out the window, where we split sides again. But anyway, today, it's all very neat and tidy. We know where we are. And what we've just watched this evening, we'll sort of start backwards, shall we, and start with what we've just watched, which is Iga Świątek beating Emma Raducanu 6-3, 6-1, which sounds like a beatdown, doesn't it? But it wasn't. Second set, yes, it was. Bit of a landslide, one-sided. I think Raducanu faded physically, whether that's to do with the illness she's been suffering with. There were a few sort of coughs and exhalations from her in that second set. She definitely did fade physically. But Świątek was in a match there in that opening set. I know 6-3 sounds fairly one-sided, but it really wasn't. It was one lapse in concentration, or one lapse in level from Raducanu to get broken, and all the other games were close. And that was a similar story in Świątek's match yesterday against Bianca Andreescu, who somehow managed to take Świątek to a tiebreak second set. But Świątek isn't having those lapses, and when she does, it's lapsing from a 10 out of 10 to a sort of 8 out of 10. I mean, she is so clinical. She's vicious on the court. She's absolutely assassin. Like, she is, to quote the Americans at the Australian Open, locked in, brackets, penis in a scribble.
Yeah. How do I follow that? Look, I find it very interesting to watch Świątek against these two opponents, Andreescu and Raducanu, because they're both Grand Slam champions. They both won the US Open very recently. And yes, they did a good job of staying with her for portions. Andreescu for longer, for more portions of her match. Still didn't take it to three sets, but she certainly looked the part, played some of the tennis she can play. I'm sure it wasn't her very best tennis, but it was good. And Raducanu had certainly six games or so in the first set where she really looked like the player that won the US Open. But Świątek was just kind of cruising during those spells and staying with them while they had their best spell. And then she just puts her foot down, and there's no rally balls, really. There's no kind of let's just spar. She's just looking to finish you. As soon as she finds her range, she's looking to end you in a rally. And unless you are Elena Rybakina or Aryna Sabalenka or players with that sort of vicious power who don't allow her to just take over, I mean, it is such a big ask to out-tennis Iga Świątek.
Mm. Yeah, all the players that have beaten Świątek this year, we spoke about it a couple of weeks ago, have taken the racket out of Świątek's hand, especially on return, I think. Krejcikova, Rybakina, Pegula in those lightning-fast conditions at the start of the year. You've got to be able to do that, because otherwise Świątek just takes charge of the point and takes over the match. And I was really struck by seeing Raducanu and Andreescu have to scramble against her and hit slice forehands on the run. And Andreescu in particular did a brilliant job of causing Świątek to just malfunction a little bit with some of her variety and her defence. But it didn't last long, and then quickly Świątek shifted gears and took over again. And what struck me most, actually, about the Świątek-Andreescu night was the mood that Świątek was in after the match. Firstly, in her encore interview, where she was just beaming and talking up her own game and talking about how good she felt. And then they did this thing where they had to hit balls into the crowd.
It's called game, set and catch.
Sorry, Matt. Yes, it does have a catchy name.
I didn't know it had a name.
How can you not know it? They announce it
I do know
loud
it.
And clear every time, David.
Right.
It's time for game, set and catch.
Yeah.
Okay.
And anyway, she wasn't very good at it, Iga Świątek, because she was trying to get it up to the top tier, and she was
aiming for the media seats.
Yeah,
I'm sure
she was hitting them up, and then suddenly she realized halfway through that she was hitting it into the wind, and she re-grabbed the mic and said, "I can't believe I've just played a whole match on this court, and I've forgotten which way the wind's blowing. Let me try the other way." And it was honestly just the sign of someone so confident, so sure of themselves. Like, you know, she's an introvert, Iga Świątek, and yet she was feeling herself out there. She was feeling confident. She was talking to the crowd. And, yeah, she then fired them the other way and just came across as someone totally
just high
confident
on
and high
yeah.
on themselves. It was, you know, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but
no, it really, we had the same reaction to it, didn't she? Because after she did that, she grabbed a pen and she jogged over to the back of the court where there was an agglomeration of autograph hunters with, you know, enormous tennis balls and stuff, and she was just bounding around them, desperate to sign as many as possible. And yeah, we see that a lot from tennis players, but exactly as you say, Matt, not necessarily introvert Iga Świątek. It was very check me out.
It was check me
it
out.
It was very yeah. check me out. And
maybe it's rubbed off from yeah, the previous match.
Yeah, it was it was notable. And gosh, she's got this look in her eye that's really terrifying. And it's Djokovic, like, you know, players come out knowing I've got to be at my very best. And to Emma Raducanu's credit, she was early
Absolutely.
Doors. It was incredibly impressive, I thought. I was really impressed by her intensity. It felt like a match, those early stages. I was upstairs taking my makeup off and I shouted down, "I like the look of this." David said, "Yep, yep. Calm down."
15 minutes later, it's basically all over.
Yeah, because Świątek's attitude is, okay, you're playing well, but I can see that you're having to absolutely redline it.
Mm.
Let's see if you can keep that up, because I'm at 7 out of 10 at the moment. I've got more gears, and I know you're at 10 out of 10. Yeah. So let's see where we are in half an hour.
She's the anti-Andy Murray. It's the 14th of March, and she still hasn't played a three-set match this year. I mean, that includes a few losses, of course, a few one-sided ones.
And the interesting element of this run at this tournament to me is she's playing more or less like she was when she was losing 8 games in 10 sets the other week. But then she ran into somebody, picked on someone her own size sort of thing, and played Barbora Krejcikova and lost. And same thing against Elena Rybakina at the Australian Open. Now, Krejcikova is not in this tournament anymore. Will that happen again? I mean, I know some people have pointed out that she wasn't feeling that well when she was in Dubai. She was under the weather, wasn't she? And maybe that was a factor. Maybe that's why she's bounding around now, is because she doesn't feel under the weather. I really think this is an interesting sunshine double for her, because I could see her going undefeated and winning the both. But will she? So I'm just really interested to see.
Well, look, she's got on paper, a favourable quarterfinal match against Sorana Cîrstea, who beat Caroline Garcia 7-5 in the third this evening. In the words of Matt Roberts, every now and then, Sorana Cîrstea just forces you to think about her.
Having not thought
about her for months, here she is. Good for her. Good for her. And now she gets the chance to take on the world number one, which, you know, good luck to her, but on paper that looks tough.
She must be in her 30s now, I would have thought, Sorana Cîrstea.
Yeah.
Because she has... Do you remember when she came along as a teenager and I really like the way she is just hanging around in her career and still wringing results out of her career?
She is 32, wow, and her career high ranking was in 2013 at 21.
Wow.
That's great.
Well, look, beating Garcia 7-5 in the third, she was a break up in the third, wasn't she? Squandered it. Garcia looked to be on course to take it. That's a heck of a win for her. But let's be frank about this. She's going to take the heavy favourite in their quarterfinal. But then the likely semi and final opponents, and there's a lot of tennis to be played before these matches end up coming off, but they would be Rybakina and Sabalenka.
Would like to see both those matches.
Rybakina against Sabalenka?
No, it would be Świątek would face Rybakina in the semis.
Okay.
And then Sabalenka in the final, if she were to beat Rybakina in the semis.
That would be
That's a lot of projecting I'm doing, but...
We like that.
Oh, yes, we
like
that.
I like projecting. It's good.
And I want to see both those matches. There's also a bunch of other matches I'd like to see, you know, if different results take place. But if it ends up going according to seeding, then I'm happy with those matches. Rybakina qualified for the quarterfinals via a very straightforward win over Varvara Krejcová. She plays Karolina Muchová in the quarterfinals. Muchová having beaten the inexplicable Markéta Vondroušová 6-4 in the third.
Yeah, and I think quite an impressive win, because she had a match point in the second set. Muchová looked like she was going to wrap it up pretty straightforwardly. And then Vondroušová started being Vondroušová, made things a lot more complicated.
And Muchová started being Muchová because of the strapping situation. Did she come onto court with that?
I said to Catherine, God, have you seen the strapping that Muchová's got? And Catherine said, oh yeah, I saw she was clutching her arm. I said, oh no, the strapping's on her leg. And it was all very Muchová. All of her was hurting. And yet...
Describe this strapping.
Oh, it was it was two different colours. For starters.
On two different legs.
Two different legs. It was on her inner right thigh and just everywhere on her left thigh.
It was like strapping and then tape.
Yeah, all different directions. Mm. It looked like someone had done it in a frenzy.
Like me at Christmas.
It looked like sort of Jackson Pollock had painted on her with kinesio tape.
Okay.
But anyway, it worked. She won 6-4 in the third. And, you know, Mukova Rybakina, interesting, I think.
Yeah, if Mukova can get into that match, you feel like she's got the tools to try and disrupt Rybakina.
It's going to be interesting, isn't it? Slice power the angles against a disruptor.
Exactly, like, but Rybakina can just hit you off the court.
Yeah.
And she's such a clean ball striker. I don't see her. I think it's more likely that you might do it against Sabalenka than Rybakina, in a way. I feel like she's a bit more measured, but fascinated to see.
Sabalenka plays Coco Gauff in the quarterfinals. That one will be tomorrow. Sabalenka having beaten Barbora Krejcikova today in three sets. We watched, well, the portion that we watched live of this was the second set when Krejcikova was very much on top, and we had to leave, clang alert here, we had to leave to do some, to meet the queue of people that were waiting for us at Steve Fergal's booth. Who are we? Goodness me.
What have we turned into?
Yeah, but at the point that we left, we felt, you know, David, you asked me, or I asked you. Anyway, we were both in agreement that we thought Krejcikova would win from that point on.
Yeah, quite right. I mean, levelling it up and Sabalenka looking a bit wayward, really, in her game at that point. And Krejcikova seems to have a more compact game. And also, she's just been in really good form of late. She's won that title. She's looked everything you'd want her to be when she's at her best. And I left that match at that point, so I don't really know how it went in the third set in terms of the dynamics of it. But I think that's impressive from Sabalenka mentally, from where she was at the end of that second set.
Yeah, agree. Mm. And
she's still only lost one match all year, Sabalenka, and that was to Krejcikova. So she's now sort of put that straight. So there's, okay, she hasn't played Iga Świątek yet. Again, would like to see it. but she's just in such good form at the moment, Sabalenka.
Running into Coco Gauff tomorrow. I think Sabalenka is the favourite in that. Gauff today, it was all about the grit and the fight and the competitiveness, wasn't it, against Rebecca Pettersson, I think, is...
I think Chanda Rubin on Tennis Channel was saying Peterson.
Okay, I'm going to go with Chanda.
I hope I haven't thrown Chanda under the bus there.
She said it.
Rebecca Pettersson, the Swedish player who's been around a long time, it feels, and is she's just there. She's plugging away, good player, but she's not someone you look out for ever as a potential upset. And, you know, we sat down and watched the opening stages today and we were like, why not? She's
got
really
game.
Good. She's got game, and I know she's in some form at the moment, semi-finalist.
I think finalist in Merida.
In Merida, her sort of warm-up tournament for here, I suppose. Coming in here high on confidence, and maybe that's all it's taken to ignore, because, you know, technically that game looks good to me, and so it proved. I mean, Coco Gauff 4-2 down in the decider, it was all about her fight. And that's my favorite Coco Gauff, seeing her fight like that. I love it.
Yeah, me too. And she was talking about the conditions today being very different to everything she's experienced in this tournament so far. And it was cloudy, overcast, not that warm today. I had a jumper on the whole day. And she said previous matches the ball was jumpy and it was lively. And today she just couldn't feel like she could get any depth on her shots. And that was very much what we were watching. Peterson's got a really big forehand and was kind of dominating with it for a lot of the match. Gauff to tough that one out in sort of trademark style, I suppose.
Gauff Sabalenka. Talk amongst yourselves, folks. I'm just looking up that head-to-head.
What do you think? What do you think for that?
I think Sabalenka, but...
I mean,
The physicality and retrieving of Gauff.
Yeah, I mean,
on a slow court.
I think it could be close. I do. Gauff wasn't great today, and she was playing kind of an Aryna Sabalenka kind of player who isn't as good today. So I don't think she's going to get away with that performance again. But you're right. I mean, there's a champion in her. Whether her game is going to end up being good enough, we'll wait and find out. I mean, I think it is going to be to get one at some point. But mentally, I mean, she's just awesome. And a great watch too,
and leads the head to head 3-1.
It's interesting. Where have they been?
Including a victory 7-6 in the third. I am remembering this now, in Toronto last year.
I did say it'd be class.
So, you know. They played in Ostrava last year.
Ostrava?
No,
2020
Ostrava.
Also 7-6
in the third. I tell you what, David, this head-to-head is looking promising.
Excellent.
For this match. Only one matchup that hasn't gone the absolute distance, and that was on clay in Rome in 2021.
At what point do we say that, you know, Sabalenka's a different player now? Mm. You know, sometimes we look at head-to-heads and we think, well, that's kind of pointless because she's so different now. You know, I remember when, and her name is always brought up and it's like, oh, where's she? I do hope she comes back. Jenny Brady. There was a time where it was like, gosh, she's just completely different now. I think Jessica Pegula is probably in that category as well. You know, anything sort of post-pandemic is very different for Pegula. And I feel like even since the start of this year, Sabalenka just feels more reliable, stronger, less likely to have a lapse in a match, more likely to bounce back from a lapse, mentally tougher, more confident, you know, all the reasons why she's the Australian Open champion.
And that must,
I would make
that
her
should
quite
be,
a strong favourite.
That's surely
Scott.
The line, isn't it? It's after Australian Open and before. And right. Is there a different player? Well, I would have thought there has to be, because that is such a monumental moment in her life. And remember how much of a struggle it was to get over the line in the match too. But she did it. She knows she's got that in her, and her appetite is no less ravenous than it was before. She just wants it. She wants to win.
And we should probably say that conditions could be a factor again tomorrow. We're expecting rain. We're expecting it to be slow, I guess. And actually, that might help Goff. I know she struggled in the conditions today, but if it's scrappy and Sabalenka can't play her best,
I'm expecting some sort
Goff.
Of refund from the Palm Desert Tourist Board. Rain.
Two days of rain.
Outrageous.
And there was one last week.
That's what I mean.
That's what we mean.
And there's gone tomorrow, and there's a bit today for a few seconds.
There was no delay.
Well, it was grey cloud.
Spitting a bit.
And what was that?
Yeah, I agree. It was disappointing, David. It was very disappointing.
Don't play this podcast to my wife, will you?
The fourth quarterfinal that was set up today, Maria Sakkari, she beat Karolina Pliskova 3 sets, of course.
Of course.
I mean, and a little bit of
background. 3 out of 3, isn't it? 3 out of 3 setters.
Yes.
Sakkari has a pattern.
Her pattern is so predictable, and we joke about it, but also when we joke about it, I'm sort of thinking, yeah, but it's not going to happen again, is it? Surely not. And it's almost absurd now. Really is. The difference today was she won the first set, rather than losing the first set and coming back to win the second. But of course, she went down a break in the decider. And, you know, we pointed at the screen and said, Sakkari's got Pliskova right where she wants her. And so it proved. The only thing we perhaps weren't expecting from this was a little spot of aggro.
Oh, yeah. What was that all about?
It was towards the end of the match, and Pliskova hit a passing shot. Sakkari was up at the net. And that passing shot went long. But Sakkari had put her racket out to hit a volley. And Pliskova was absolutely convinced that Sakkari had touched the ball with her racket. So it should have been Pliskova's point. umpire didn't call it. I think Pliskova's argument was, well, Sakkari knows she should call that on herself. She's even posted the still and put it on Instagram.
Pliskova. Wow, that is quite salty, isn't it?
I love it when they double down on the aggro.
Yeah.
Have we had a Maria Sakkari response yet?
I don't believe so.
Matt's monitoring it.
I'm on it.
He's got both windows open simultaneously, probably with notifications.
I hope the response involves, this is not professional. Tamara Korpach style.
And of course, those two have had, not, I don't think aggro between them before, but it was Sakkari that Pliskova was playing, where she famously smacked the umpire's chair with her racket multiple times. Was that in Rome? Right. Or certainly on clay.
I'd say that's fairly aggrotastic.
But I don't know whether it was aimed directed at Sakkari.
Sakkari was a mere bystander.
He was in her vicinity.
Yeah, exactly. But I do find Sakkari so fascinating because she does win an awful lot of close matches. And she is someone who we have, you know, really questioned her nerve. And it goes back to the pattern that we're talking about. It's when she's in the lead that she has real issues. And even today, she had to break to win the match.
Is it possible that she's the most mentally strong and the most mentally weak player in the WTA Tour at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, there's very complex psychology going on there, isn't she? It's the Nishikori thing of how much the balance of obviously incredible that you're winning these close matches, but also should you be in them in the first place?
I mean, I must say her wins this week have been quite impressive because she had a 0-3 head to head with Rogers going into that. She had a 0-1 head to head against Kalinina, so she'd never beaten either of her first two opponents, and then she in one of her press conferences, she actually cited Thomas Johansson, who used to coach her, as her kind of inspiration, because she says, when I'm starting a tournament, not playing well, you know, winning ugly kind of thing, she says, I always think back to a conversation I had with Thomas Johansson, who said that when he won the Australian Open in 2002, he was playing horribly in the first few rounds.
Remember, he told us that, didn't
exactly.
he?
Exactly.
Tennis Relived.
Yeah, so she says she always has that in mind when she's, you know, struggling in the first few rounds. And
so should he get continued royalties?
Probably. For that
yeah.
bit of advice, bit of, you know, psychology. I think the problem is it doesn't feel like she's finding her game. Like, at one point, it all clicked for Thomas Johansson.
Hey, well, there's still time.
I guess there is still time.
Well, maybe it could be against Petra Kvitova. No one clicks against Petra Kvitova, do they? I mean, she denies you any click.
Yeah, you don't really have much say in the match.
No.
Other than running about trying to get it back.
Petra Kvitova today played possibly the match of the tournament, quite frankly. We might have had the two matches of the tournament today, actually. We'll get on to the other one in the men's shortly. But Kvitova beat Jessica Pegula after saving four match points to win through in the deciding set tiebreak. This was the last match on Stadium 1 of the day session. Today it held up the night session. And in fact, it made the night session start in quite a flat atmosphere because it was still the aftermath of this extraordinary match. P.S. We'd like to say Indian Wells do the most brilliant job of turning around the day and night sessions.
Yeah,
it is seamless.
Well, yeah, because what they do is if a night session ticket holder arrives and the night session officially hasn't started yet, they're allowed to go onto the court, go to their section, find an empty seat. They make an announcement rather than keeping everyone outside the stadium and then you've got a huge turnover to do. You've got everyone out, everyone in. It's a whole thing. For example, at the US Open, you know, we've all been there where there's just a huge crowd of people waiting outside the Arthur Ashe Stadium and can take half an hour, 45 minutes. Here, it's, as you said, completely seamless. It's really impressive.
And I know they don't face some of the challenges.
Of course.
That other tournaments face, but it shows that it's possible.
Yeah.
You know? And well done to them, because it makes a big difference. But yeah, this match, as well as the Medvedev-Zverev match, which we'll come on to, really delayed the start of the night session, and I totally understand why it left an aftermath in its wake, because it was absolutely epic.
It was wild, wasn't it?
Absolutely epic. We watched this, we watched quite a lot of it live, but we ended up watching the denouement together on a screen, and again, Clang coming up here in the on location Steve Fergal's suite.
Very nice it was too.
Very nice it was too. all stand, and it was one of those things where you're in a room full of strangers, and a lot of those strangers probably weren't massive Petra Kvitova fans, or maybe knew about Jessica Pegula because she's American, whatever. But by the end, you're all having this incredible shared experience in different ways. There were people over to our left that had developed a sort of dance type thing, a cheer combined with a dance. Nobody had turned up that day, us included, thinking we're going to be absolutely obsessed with Jessica Pegula and Petra Kvitova for 20 minutes with a room full of strangers, but
24,
and it's going to be something that you'll remember for a long time. Yeah, but
24 point tiebreak, and you're right. I mean, everybody was looking at each other when, and it was, oh no, oh wow, it was great, great stuff. And I mean, the contrast between the two. You'd got Kvitova, who just seems to play her own type of percentage tennis. I'm going to blast the ball for a winner or a loser. And that's all there is to it.
Yeah, it's percentage tennis. It's just lower percentage tennis.
But, you know, she doesn't seem to doubt that approach at all. She doesn't beat herself up. It goes wrong. She just cracks on.
That's the magic ingredient, isn't it?
It is, really. And we saw a side to Jessica Pegula that I must admit, maybe listeners to this podcast will say I knew this all along, but I did not know what an amazing retriever she is, because I'm used to her trying to dominate rallies. I mean, we have seen her on the back foot against certain players. She's got out hit by Iga Świątek at times, although she did win that recent one at the start of the year. But in this match, there was no chance for her to be on the front foot, certainly in that set and a half that we were watching. She was just chasing balls down, but her ability to, I don't know whether it's predict, guess, just feel which way it was going and get there and scramble it back, was amazing. And it was even more amazing that Petra Kvitova still won the match despite having to hit that many extra shots. I'm sure the court surface played a part in that. Daniil Medvedev will absolutely assure me, because it would have slowed Kvitova's big shots up a little bit. But they were both doing what they do to the hilt, and it was just a treat to watch it.
Yeah, and you said that Petra Kvitova saved four match points, and that is so true. She saved them. Like, I don't think Pegula did an awful lot wrong. Maybe some more first serves in that tiebreak would have helped, but the forehands that Kvitova hit to save a bunch of those match points was just extraordinary. And
she reminded me how good her forehand is this evening. I haven't watched a whole lot of Petra Kvitova recently, and I was like, why haven't I been watching Petra Kvitova forehands all the time? Something about the flight of the ball off that forehand when she was hitting it like she was. And I know there were two very crucial missed forehands in that tiebreak that I was certain we'd end up talking about in the podcast. I thought that was going to, cost her the match.
Yeah, she was missing them when she was up.
Yeah.
You know, she was missing them to close, but she was finding them absolutely when she needed to, when she was match point down or it was, you know, 7-7 or something. You know, she just kept coming up with brilliance. And then on match point, a fantastic serve volley with the backhand volley that went right onto the sideline, and Pegula couldn't quite chase it down.
And it was impressive because she's not a comfortable volleyer, Petra Kvitova, really. And, you know, she just kept on going for it. And I know that's her game. That's That's all that she knows. She's been doing this a long time now. You know, she knows who she is. She knows her game. She knows what works. But it's still admirable to watch it, isn't it? You know, a lot of players wouldn't have recovered from that missed forehand on match point.
It just reached that stage where it was going to be a really tough match to lose, you know, for whoever did lose it. And I can't help but notice that I'm drinking a Heineken at the moment, which is Jessica Pegula's signature move, isn't it?
In a misery drink of choice.
In a post-match defeat press conference. I hope she's had a few, or maybe a slightly harder drink after that one.
Or a cuddle with Coco Andrescu, which is, according to Instagram, how Bianca coped with her loss to Iga Świątek last night. It was a heck of a match, and it set up a Kvitova-Sakkari quarterfinal. That is the first match in the ninth session tomorrow.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Now, I mentioned, I've teased the men's match of the day, and that was Daniil Medvedev beating Alexander Zverev 7-5 in the third set. It was a greatest hits of Daniil Medvedev, including a new hit, which was a sort of massive injury mid-match, after which he seemed to get better. Maybe not immediately, but
and he might not even be able to play tomorrow, and yet he seemed to get better.
Yeah, I mean, it was an ankle turn in the second set that, look, I know they always look bad or worse in slow motion, but it looked bad to me. It was extreme. It was a very sharp angle, you know. It was a very sort of jagged movement. But then, as you two pointed out, the difference between that and what Zverev sustained in his French Open semi-final was there wasn't the weight on it at the time. And who knows how we'll pull up tomorrow? That is a big, big question mark. But he was able to carry on after a lot of very painful looking treatment. And that is often how it is, isn't it? There's the first stage with those ankle turns is shock. Oh my goodness, it's agony. I'm never going to be able to walk again. Then there's a sort of grace period where I guess adrenaline kicks in and the pain is alleviated. And then it's suddenly, after the match the next day, that's when the swelling kicks in and it's potentially quite bad. So look, we don't know what will happen tomorrow, but this was quite a match and quite an effort from Daniil Medvedev, who continues to insist that this is not a hard court.
And he would know because, quote, I'm a specialist at hard courts.
It was so good. So good.
Yeah. And I think what has impressed me most about Medvedev this week and is a sure sign that he's back is that he's been able to put up with a lot, you know, like
His own attitude.
A lot of it is of his own making, absolutely. Yeah. His own attitude is not good, and he's very honest about that. And he doesn't like the court, and he's not been playing as well, and he turned his ankle mid-match. I just don't think Medvedev of last year is still able to win all these matches.
Yeah. There's a resilience.
There's a resilience. There's a confidence behind him at the moment. And that's a big difference to last year. What, he's now won, what, 17 matches in a row. And it just builds up. And, it feels unlikely that he's going to go on to win this tournament, partly because of the ankle, partly because of everything I've just said. But I still think it's just a good sign that he's been able to get this far in conditions that don't suit him. And I mean, he's talked a lot about the courts. A lot of players have talked about the courts. I enjoy seeing this Medvedev. You know, it is quite funny to me, and I also enjoy the variety of speeds that we get throughout the year. I wouldn't want every hard court to be lightning quick. I wouldn't want every court to be really slow either. And, you know, as Medvedev pointed out in his press conference, Cameron Norrie's perfectly happy with the court.
Yeah.
And he might not be some weeks, but he is here. And that's just tennis. Yeah. Really.
And it was another good press conference. I was in that one. And he didn't sound very confident that he's going to be able to play tomorrow to me. And he did say he'll give it a go, see how he wakes up. But it clearly stiffened up, swelled up. And so I think we'll have to wait and see. But I'm not that hopeful that he can play or at least be competitive, really.
That match would be against his own backhand list, Alejandro Davidovich Fokina.
Yeah, he also talked in this one. At the end, I asked him about the work he's still doing to try to control his emotions out there. And because, I mean, look, we all find it very funny when he behaves like that. He is convinced that he plays worse when he's in that mood. I'm not convinced about that, if I'm honest. I mean, I think he has boiled over in the past and it's hurt him. And he also said, look, I know that when I was a teenager, I was much worse. You know, these things would happen and they would tailspin out of control and there was no chance he would get them back on track whatsoever.
Is there footage available of teenage
Medvedev? I mean, look, you know, we've had some of the ones which weren't funny when he was throwing money at umpires and stuff like that at Wimbledon and just really behaving obnoxiously and appallingly, to be honest. True. And he would agree with that now as a man who's in his late 20s. But he's very clear that he can't control it. There are days that he just can't. He comes off the court, he knows he's done wrong, he knows he shouldn't speak to certain people certain ways, and he knows it's not helping him, but he can't stop. And he says he's still trying to learn, he's still trying to improve. But I'm not sure he really believes he's going to get very far.
Well, very relatable. Medvedev to play Alejandro Davidovich Fokina. They've scheduled that match third on tomorrow, which it had to be a day session match, I think, because of what the scheduling was today. They've given him maximum time to try and recover. Fingers crossed that match happens, but yeah, who knows with that kind of injury. Davidovich Fokina beat Christian Garin today in two straight sets. We had, speaking of two straight sets, Cameron Norrie over Andrei Rublev. I gave Norrie a decent chance in this match, I think, ahead of it. I certainly didn't think it would be as straightforward as it was for Norrie, especially given the match that they had at the US Open last year where it was very one-sided, three sets for Andrei Rublev that day, and that was when Norrie seemingly had been in really good form. So, yeah, I mean, couple of things. It emphasises that really was a miss for Norrie at the US Open last year, that he didn't show up for that match. He should.
He was in a terrible mood, wasn't he?
Yeah,
he
was
smashed
bizarre.
The racket, I think, in that match.
It was bizarre, that match, because he... Yeah, Cameron Norrie is good enough to, at the very least, really challenge Andrei Rublev and on a great day, make mincemeat of him, which is pretty much what he did today. And it sounds like, you know, Rublev, semi-finalist here last year and seemed to be in decent form this year, but
it
came on, it was...
It sounds like he was in the mood that Nari was in at the US Open.
We were being warned. We bumped into some people around the grounds. We were actually just headed over to the Steve Fergles booth for our signing, and we bumped into some people who warned David not to go anywhere near Andre Rublev, because it was all the things that you don't like to see from him.
Yeah, even though we are obviously in discussions about future coaching arrangements, if you've listened to our friend's show from just after the Australian Open, when I suggested that me and Andre Rublev should be a coach-player partnership. Anyway, how did we get into that? The word I got was that he's being awful to himself again, and it's early in a match, and I didn't see a ball of it. I don't want to see that.
Russell Fuller described him as volcanic from the first point. Right.
From the first point.
And he'd been getting better recently at that, so it's a shame.
Mm. But by all accounts, Norrie, absolutely brilliant, and yeah, it suits him here.
Loves
He's a former champion, of course it suits him.
Yeah, and
has
backed up that victory with two quarterfinal appearances since, I think.
Good on him.
Really, really loves the conditions.
Good on him. A group of Brits came to see us in the booth today, some lovely Brits, and they had just watched the first set of Norrie against Rublev, and we were very flattered that they'd left the match to come and see us. And I asked for a potted review of what they'd seen, because, you know, we'd be talking about it later. And they were raving about Norrie, and one of them was reaching for an adjective, and he said, it's just so sensible, which is such a classic adjective that you end up going for with Norrie, which is unfair, but also appropriate. You know, he deserves better. He's such a good tennis player, but he is also really sensible.
Mm. You don't gush about anyone else by calling them sensible,
no.
But it's appropriate for Cameron Norrie.
So sensible. So Norrie will play Matt's pick for the title, Francis Tiafoe, in the first match of the day tomorrow.
Bit worried about that.
Okay.
He's had a dream draw, Tiafoe. Who's he played? Marcus Giron. He played Alejandro Tabilo today. He was in the Tsitsipas section, which is why, you know, we knew Tsitsipas wasn't going to do anything here. I just felt like Tiafoe would come through there. That's a huge test against Cameron Norrie. And I feel like Tiafoe needs a crowd. He needs an occasion. First up on a damp day doesn't suggest that that's going to be the case. But if anyone can make an occasion out of that, it probably is Francis Tiafoe. He did well today. He was down an early break, recovered it, won pretty straightforwardly. I mean, it's a bit of a heart pick, really. I would love to just see Tiafoe win this thing. I mean, I just think that would be great news for tennis, to be honest. He's got a chance, for sure.
Yeah, please brighten up my damp morning, Francis.
Who is the favourite in that match?
I think Norrie's the favourite. Former champion. Former champion in good form.
Only lost three matches all year, won 21.
US Open semi-finalist playing at home.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. That's
I give Tiafoe a good chance.
I'm
but
giving
I do
it a total 50-50.
Okay. Taylor Fritz will play in a couple of days' time against Jannik Sinner. Fritz beat Fucsovics today in two straight sets. Pretty straightforward stuff for Fritz. It's already a good title defense for him, I would say. I mean, he'll want better. He very well might get better, but solid title defense, I would say.
Yes, really impressive. As I said, I thought just coming through that Ben Shelton match in his first match, he did really well there. I saw him hit his, I don't quite know how to describe it, reverse slice serve.
Oh, did he?
Which we saw him do in the Eisenhower Cup. Where it's on the ad side that he does it, and he hits it out wide, but with slice. Mm. He hits sort of across the ball when he serves. I've never seen...
It looks a bit sort of Mansell Barami Champions Tour.
Yes.
Yeah. Except he does it at like 120
miles an hour.
Yeah.
30 all.
Yeah. It's a
I like
really
it.
Good shot.
It's like a party piece, but it's actually really effective.
Really,
as well,
it's so hard to read.
Did he win the point?
I think he did.
Oh, good. Okay.
He will play Yannick Sinner in the quarters.
Who's
yes,
quietly
please.
Moving his way through, isn't he?
Yeah, beat Wawrinka today. By all accounts, Wawrinka. We watched a bit of this. We were trying to multi-screen. It was all happening. Wawrinka a bit tired. After that Runa match.
He looked exhausted to me.
Okay, a lot tired after the Runa match.
Yeah, I mean, Sinner had some tape on his knee. His knee sort of buckled a couple of times, and he fell to the floor. He wasn't moving between points particularly freely, I didn't think, but in the rallies, he just had the measure of an exhausted Wawrinka. And Fritz Sinner is...
fun.
Mm.
I like that.
Into that.
Do you think Stan was in any way shaken after the big row the night before?
I don't think at any stage during or after he was shaken by that. So you beat Holger Rune in the match yesterday. An absolute thriller. Brilliant. Full disclosure, we missed most of it because we were playing golf with Dan Evans.
Yeah.
But we were following it closely. Following it closely.
All the live scores.
An absolute thriller. And, you know, we were all hanging on the handshake. And it ends up, I don't even know how to describe it. So, I mean, Rune's lost, obviously. So he's in a position of weakness, getting his own back for what Wawrinka said to him in Paris. But then again, what Wawrinka said to him in Paris, he said in defeat. So...
And what did he say in Paris?
He said, "My advice to you is to stop acting like a baby."
Right. Mm. Okay.
So they do the handshake, and then there's a bit of a pause, and it looks like Rune's not going to say anything. And then he clearly thinks, "I've got to say something," and he goes. He sort of says quite meekly, "Well, you've got nothing to say now," but not very clearly. And Wawrinka just sort of looks at him like,
"What?
Huh?
What?
Huh? What?"
And he just looks baffled by it. And Rune has to repeat himself. And Wawrinka continues to look baffled. And all the while, Wawrinka has a sort of slightly condescending hand on Rune's shoulder. And it's all a total misfire, really.
Well, he goes, "What do you want me to say?"
Yeah, and poor old Rune. Like, we all know how it is when you've spent 6 months envisaging what you would say to someone in revenge if you had the chance. You've scripted it in your mind. You've dreamed about it. You've written about it in your journal.
And then you're frozen.
And then the moment comes and you go, what do you got to say now? it was really lame, but in a relatable way.
Yeah, and Stan just was so unbothered by the whole thing.
Little Holger Rune and massive Stan Wawrinka.
It all looked so pathetic.
He looks like he could sort of body slam him any second.
Yeah. Mm.
And Wawrinka was asked about it in press, and he said Rune's gaining a reputation in the locker room that he's going to regret. Which were big words.
That is quite chastening, isn't it?
I feel like Wawrinka must
be
I feel like Wawrinka must be a very intimidating presence in that locker room, given what he's achieved, given the way he can just put people away.
He's agricultural.
Yeah. It's maybe not the wisest choice to take on Stan Wawrinka.
Rune. He started it, is what Rune would say.
Although Wawrinka would say Rune started it with his behaviour.
Well, yeah.
I mean, but I didn't particularly like the way Wawrinka did what he did in Paris. I understand that he wanted to say something. I think he should have said it in the locker room, personally.
But then
Rune's mum would say that he screamed yah in his face.
We're not doing anything to dampen down his locker room reputation, are
so
we?
So the press conference was the perfect place then. Well done, Stan.
In the other quarterfinal set up today in the men's draw. I'm just drawing this out a bit because we actually don't know who one half of this will be. It'll be Carlos Alcaraz, that's for sure. He beat Jack Draper via retirement this evening. Such a disappointment. I mean, look, Alcaraz looked brilliant and bang on it, but Draper never did. I clocked some kinesio tape on his stomach, on his abdominal area pretty early on. He looked to be firing okay at the very start, but was just overwhelmed a bit by Alcaraz. But it didn't take long for his service speeds to just completely fall off a cliff and him to look like he was having trouble rotating the way he needed to, well, on both wings, quite frankly. And he did call the trainer onto court at the early stages of the second set, but then as he was serving two love down in that second set, it obviously became clear that the injury was such that there was no point in getting any treatment, and he threw in the towel, and it was a massive disappointment. Alcaraz moving on to the quarterfinals again to face the winner of a match that is potentially 2 points away from its conclusion, 1 point away from its conclusion. It's 3 match points to Tommy Paul against Felix.
Yeah, it's been a really fascinating match to watch just out of a corner of our eye while we've been chatting here on the podcast, because it looked as though Paul was going to race through this final set when he was 3 love up in it. And Ogier Aliassime really dug in, and some of the rallies in this match have been fantastic. The foot speed of both of them, the whipped forehands being struck by Ogier Aliassime. He's kind of doing what he does. But Paul, he's such an intelligent player. We've just seen a rally in which he's just hit a lovely lob that has gone over the head of Ogier Aliassime, and sort of almost like a setup for a passing shot with the lob. And we've just seen the one match point saved there by the Canadian. But I mean, I think Tommy Paul has done incredibly well here to get himself back after losing his lead in this deciding set, because he started to lose his way and he was starting to be manhandled a bit in some of the rallies too. You know, we've been speculating about how, well, I certainly think Ogier Aliassime would have a real chance against Alcaraz because he's 3 love up against him. I think he could move with him. But, I mean, Tommy Paul has just hit a forehand long to get another match point saved. You know, he's got to win against Alcaraz as well.
Yeah, Alcaraz hasn't beaten either of these potential quarterfinal opponents. He's got a 0-4 collective record against them, which, look, he'll still be the favourite, regardless of who it is. But it makes it a bit interesting, doesn't it?
Sure.
I was just thinking that Tommy Paul might fall into the category of player for whom past record doesn't mean all that much.
Mm.
He's different in the last 6 months for me, Tommy Paul.
Yes, I think so. To quote Rafael Nadal, or if Rafael Nadal were commenting on Tommy Paul, he'd be keen to point out that he's fourth in the race.
Oh.
And actually, he's accumulated almost as many points this year already as he got last year.
Wow.
And I thought he had a pretty good year last year. Yeah. I was kind of surprised that he wasn't. Was he just outside the seedings in Australia, or very low seed anyway? I felt like he kind of, in my mind, he was higher ranked than that, probably because the back end of last year he did have some big wins, including over Nadal. And this year he's been awesome, as we see a third match point come and go. We're going to have to drag this,
we are.
this Felix, analysis out a little bit longer.
That was love 40, 5-6 love 40 on Ogier Aliassime's serve, and he saved those three. I don't think Tommy Paul's done anything particularly wrong there.
He did just hit a backhand just wide. I thought he made it at the start.
But, I mean, Ogier Aliassime had hit the sideline.
He's been rock solid, I think, Ogier Aliassime, in this run of 3 points. That's the key, isn't it? He's just brought it. He's just won another one. He's got a game point for a tie break.
Do you want to do some commentating, David? Are we allowed to do
don't
some commentating?
Think so.
look, we'll keep chatting away. For the remainder of this game, if it goes to a tie break, we'll probably call the whole thing off?
I think so. You can find out on the internet.
What a trail. I mean, it does make it interesting, doesn't it? That I've just said Tommy Paul's head-to-heads are irrelevant, but whoever it is that faces Alcaraz and it is going into a deciding set tiebreak will have a bit of belief, you know, because they've beaten him before. And I think when you're facing the famous Carlos Alcaraz that everyone's talking about, and let's face it, is the star in Indian Wells. He's the guy that Larry Ellison is turning up to watch.
Yeah.
It's only Alcaraz. He might have seen other matches, and if he has, I just haven't clocked in there, or the cameras haven't picked him out. But the only matches that I've seen Larry Ellison picked out courtside for have been Carlos Alcaraz matches. He's the one that they're cooing over this year here. He's the one that people are turning up to catch a glimpse of for the first time.
He's the one they need, to be honest. In the absence of the other big stars, they need Alcaraz to... I mean, there's some good American players, a lot of American interest with Tiafoe and Fritz and Paul, but they really could do with the electricity of Alcaraz, because that's what he's got.
Sure does. We'll let you know who he faced, past tense, when we're back with you in a couple of days' time to wrap up all of the quarterfinal action. We're going to continue to do our appearances to meet as many of you as possible at the Steve Fogel's booth on site at Indian Wells. That'll be tomorrow at midday.
Yeah, you may do a sort of
presenting for Amazon from tomorrow. We're on air from 10:40 local time, which is 5:40 UK time tomorrow. But I'll be in the vicinity, and I'll be trying to swoop by. And at the very least, you'll get to meet David and Matt, which is the best part of the deal anyway, I promise you. And they also like seeing pictures of dogs. So
yeah, that's true.
There you go. So do come and see us at midday tomorrow at the Steve Fogel's booth. And of course, anybody that signs up for the package, any listener to the tennis podcast that signs up for a package in the Steve Fogel's International Tennis Tours booth gets a 5% discount. And if you're a friend of the pod in the UK or the US, you have a chance to enter our competition to win an extraordinary prize package to come to the BNP Paribas Open in 2024. 3 nights stay at a 4-star hotel here in Indian Wells. I don't think there's anything less than 4-star hotels in Indian Wells. I don't think they bother.
They don't look like this in where we're from.
And you get to watch all of the men's and women's semi-finals and finals. It is a heck of a prize package. You'll also get transportation to and from the venue, VIP package, the lot. It's an extraordinary prize. And if you'd like to enter, become a friend, obviously, if you haven't already, the link to do that is in our show notes. And go to the following URL, toursfortennis.com/podcast/TTP. toursthenumber4tennis.com/podcast/TTP. Tango, tango, papa.
Very good.
To be clear. And thank you, of course, to Steve Fogel's and to One Location for bringing us here to Indian Wells and for allowing us to have a lovely, lovely time.
We sure are.
We sure are. We will be back with you on Thursday, as I say, to wrap up all the quarterfinal action, and we'll be daily with you throughout the remainder of the tournament from that point onwards. We have a mascot today, folks. That mascot is Bruno, a 3-year-old French bulldog who was adopted in April of 2022 from True North Rescue Mission and came all the way from Dallas, Texas, to now reside in Brooklyn, New York.
Aww.
That's like... I don't know, you can make a film out of that. That's lovely. And Bruno is lovely. Matt, there's always a moment in the day if I'm at the desk at the same time this is happening with Matt where Matt says, oh, You're gonna love the mascot today, Catherine. He says it every day. And I do. Bruno is an absolute delight. So thank you for being a mascot for the Tennis Podcast. We have our mascots. David has Maisie.
Right, Maisie.
I've got Xenia. Matt has Maisie. No. You haven't got Maisie, Matt.
No, I haven't stolen David's mascot yet.
Blimmin' out.
Next year, you'll probably have Maisie.
I have Darwin.
You've got Darwin. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our top folks and executive producers, Jamie, Hannah and Drew. And we have shout-outs, Matt.
We have Swapna Sarte from Cincinnati.
Right, Swapna Sarte from Cincinnati. That's a...
It's good, isn't it?
I don't know. Just sounds good.
Mm. Swapna says, I share David's 90s tennis nostalgia.
Go on, Swapna.
I had no topspin backhand until my 20s because of hours spent watching Steffi Graf.
Because that's just not what you need to do. You need to have a nice slice.
Mm.
Cincinnati. It's actually not home of... Cincinnati tournament. I was going to say I've been to Cincinnati, but actually I haven't. I've been to Mason, Ohio, which is where the Cincinnati tournament is. But I've flown into and out of Cincinnati. Thank you, Swapna.
We've also got Lisa Tomlinson, who recently moved to Oklahoma from Southern California.
Oh.
All right, Lisa.
We had some listeners from Oklahoma today, didn't we?
We did indeed, yeah.
I believe it's too far away to drive. Well, that's what they told us.
I mean,
anyway.
I tried to find out how far it is, how long it takes to drive, and she couldn't tell me.
Lisa says that she's been a listener since Andy Murray's run to number one in 2016. And everything else since then, from COVID to taking you along on my 1,500-mile drive from Southern California to Oklahoma.
Wow.
That's a long way.
That is a long old drive, that.
I mean, that's just not a drive. It's just, is it? Yeah. That's a find alternative means of transport. Yeah.
That's some sort of space flight. Thank you, Lisa.
And finally, we have Kelly Pepin, who is from Seattle.
Hey! All right, Kelly.
And Kelly says, I've been a tennis fan since I was very young, thanks to my mum. We watch tennis together all the time, often setting alarms for very strange times of the day or night. Our family think we're nuts.
Relatable.
She a Seahawk.
Any tennis Kellys?
Kelly Evenden.
What a shout that is.
Well, you may not be right. I may not be right. It's somebody from the 80s, I believe. As Felix,
can you come up with another one? Because Felix has just saved.
He's just saved another two match points.
Sixth match point.
I thought you were going to be able to produce enough Kellys to get us through until the result of this, David.
I think there might be a Kelly Jones.
No, that is the lead singer of the Stereophonics.
Well, there is a Kelly Jones. Then she's not a tennis player.
The leads are with the
Shall I look it up?
Let me see. The good news is everyone's turned off. Yeah. So.
Well, maybe they're waiting for the result.
Kelly. I mean, it's a surname and a first name, so there should be some.
Kelly Graham Evenden is a former professional tennis player from New Zealand. Evenden turned professional in 1985 and won his first doubles title in 1986 at Cologne. So there we are, 61 years of age.
Any more details about Kelly Evenden?
It's a long rally.
5'9".
Any other tennis Kellys?
Quarterfinals of the Australian Open.
It's
so long.
Let me just look up Kelly Jones. Hold on a second. See.
This is Felix's first match point, isn't it?
Kelly Jones is an American former world number one doubles player. I'm so good at this. Jones reached the finals at doubles at the Australian and US Opens in 1992.
That's why
who was his partner, David?
I don't know.
Let's find out. Let's find out.
He's 58 years of age, and his doubles partner, when he won the doubles at the Australian Open and the US Open, was, let's have a look.
This is a new segment. Felix takes David such a Googles. Long time
between points. Oh,
he's only gone and done it. Call off the search, David. No one cares.
Felix
is joking.
Saved 6 match points, I think.
That is crazy. Well played.
Wow.
Well played to him.
Wow.
Good hug at the net.
Yeah, that was real respect from Tommy Corlea, wasn't it? I mean, he knows.
That's big from Felix.
Big from Felix.
He needed this.
And now
this week,
he plays Alcaraz, who he's beaten 3 times.
Mm.
Love that. Okay, David.
So, Kelly Jones and Kelly Everton, thank you for your service.
Did we ever find out who Kelly Jones' doubles partner was?
No. We cancelled that.
We don't need to anymore.
No, we've got the result in. It's all fine.
I don't care anyway.
No one's listening anyway. Thank you if you still are. We'll be back in 2 days' time. We'll speak to you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.